I'm Natalie Nye with the Australian Institute of International Affairs, and today we are with Australia's Ambassador to Russia, His Excellency Peter Tesh. Peter, it's wonderful to have you join us here.
Great to join you. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you so much. Are you able to start off by telling us about your current role and responsibilities and also highlighting a bit of your previous positions
Sure.
with the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade?
Well, since March 2016, I've been Australian Ambassador to the Russian Federation. I'm also concurrently ambassador to 8 other countries, former republics of the Soviet Union, Armenia, Belarus, Moldova, and the 5 states of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. So it's a very big remit, and it's a fascinating and very diverse set of countries to which to be accredited. It's not always easy to get around them with the regularity that I would like, because Russia itself is also a very substantial country of accreditation. But I've come back to Russia now after a first posting in what was then the Soviet Union in the late 1980s. And in the interim, I've had a number of interesting different roles, being posted in Kazakhstan in the late 1990s as ambassador when we had an embassy there. My most recent assignment overseas was as ambassador to Germany, Switzerland, and Liechtenstein, where I was in Berlin for 4 years. And most recently, before I went to Moscow, I was the head of our international security division based in Canberra, dealing with arms control, disarmament, non-proliferation, counter-terrorism, that whole suite of regional and global security issues. So interspersed over the course of my 30-year career, I've been stints in the UN in New York, in the IT area of the department. I was involved in the World Expos in Shanghai and in 2000 in Hanover, worked in our Melbourne office, and in the office of the then Minister for Trade in Parliament House, who was from Western Australia. So it's good to be able to reunite some of those elements here in Perth with the AAIA.
Wonderful. And Peter, so you mentioned that you started off your overseas postings with DFAT in the Soviet Union.
That's
and
right.
Now looking 25 years after that, you're posted to the Federation of Russia. What sort of changes have you noticed in this period of time?
There's been enormous changes, of course. And immediately after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, I was visiting Russia, Moscow, in 92, 3, 4, just on private visits, just to stay in touch with what was going on and with friends. My last visit to Moscow was, in fact, in 2004. So it was an interesting gap between then and last year to return. So what's changed? Moscow has become an enormously prosperous and booming city. It's got the traffic of Shanghai. It has designer everything. It's a very wealthy city, very different sense of itself, a very prosperous mood amongst the population of Moscow. But that, of course, is in a way a microcosm, and it's an almost self-contained reflection of some of the larger changes that have happened in Russia. The Yeltsin years, of course, saw an extremely rapid blossoming of private enterprise. Nowadays, some look back at that period and view that a little more critically, but it certainly helped to shift some of the fundamentals of the way in which Russians thought about their own interests, thought about their engagement with the world. It opened up opportunities for economic growth and development, but it also brought a considerable social impact and, for many people, a cost. Nowadays, we see, I think, a country which is a lot more confident about its place in the world, is developing a resurgent sense of self. President Putin is making quite an emphasis out of the sense of self, what he sees as Russia's natural role in the world, in global affairs, re-inculcating a sense of pride in the achievements of the Russian nation over the centuries. And so there is this mix of opportunity and a growing sense again of what constitutes the Russianness that in the minds of many people makes Russia unique. It's a country where the young people much more media savvy, much more worldly aware and engaged. The Facebook generation is one of the biggest changes that I can detect. Of course, there is a fundamental change that social media and communications technologies have wrought upon the way in which Russians view themselves and the world. But of course, it's also a country which remains terribly important for Australian interests and terribly influential in regional and global affairs. And so some of those elements continue from my earlier posting, but take slightly different forms. And there are different emphases now, of course. Nowadays, the struggle against terrorism is a new and very prominent theme in foreign affairs, not just in relations between Russia and other countries, but of course in Australia's own dealings with many countries in the world. The economic potential of the relationship is one of the areas that warrants attention, but of course nowadays it's influenced by other policy factors, sanctions and counter-sanctions. So one of the things that hasn't changed 25 years on is the extremely warm personal relationships that you develop with Russians. And it's been nice to both rekindle those from 25 years ago and find people just as happy to see me now as they were then, and very genuine, sincere friendships, but also to be able to develop new relationships with people who are representatives of a different and emerging Russia, which I find fascinating.
I can imagine. And through an economic lens, when we're looking at what kinds of opportunities and challenges there are for Australian companies in Russia, can you give us your insight or your perspective on these?
Yes, absolutely. Well, there is no doubt that sanctions that Australia imposed following Russia's annexation of Crimea and other actions have affected elements of the economic relationship. Of greater impact, I think, have been Russia's counter-sanctions. And indeed, when I was interviewed by TASS before I went to Moscow, they asked me about the relatively low trade levels and posited that sanctions had brought that about, and what did I see by way of prospects. And my observation then is still my observation now. The reason Russian consumers cannot buy high-quality Australian beef, dairy, and fruit and vegetable products is not because of our policies, it's because of counter-sanctions that the Russian government has imposed. So it is import bans, not export bans, that limit those trading opportunities. But the sanctions apply to very specific areas. There are real opportunities that we are working to develop in mining and particularly in education. I think there's also room for collaboration and profitable engagement in infrastructure, particularly large events infrastructure, and the associated services. But the particular focus at the moment is on mining equipment, technologies and services, and education. Australia is still a very attractive education destination for Russian students, and indeed under the Global Education Program, which is run by the Russian government, funded centrally, which sends postgrad students all over the world with significant stipends. Australia is the second most popular destination. I recently farewelled a group of masters and PhD students from Moscow, well, in Moscow, from all over Russia, who are coming to various universities in Australia to pursue, in many cases, multi-year studies. So that's a real opportunity, and there is huge respect in Russia for our world-leading capabilities in mining and resources, particularly minerals, oil and gas, also relevant, but mining services, software, technologies. There's a lot of interest here in Western Australia. There's quite a lot of activity, and that is an area that we're keen to see develop, and that is not an area that is currently affected by Australian sanctions or Russian counter-sanctions. But as always, if business is interested in working in Russia, they should be taking advice. Austrade, of course, has a presence in Moscow and work very closely with business to maximise opportunities in Russia, but also in other countries of accreditation, such as Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. So I wouldn't want to give people the impression that there is an El Dorado. It's a complex market, it's a difficult environment, there is a lot of uncertainty, and because of capital sanctions, there are some constraints on long-term, large financial-scale projects where, on the Russian side, accessing capital can be difficult, and that can sometimes influence the scope of the economic opportunity. But there are certainly opportunities there for business. Australian business is well respected in the field of mining and resources, and there are some very good success stories. So we're keen to see what we can do more in that area.
And Ambassador Tesh, in terms of talking about Australian companies or other multinational companies that are established and possibly expanding their operations in Russia, what can you tell us about the lessons they've learnt that have helped them to expand and to really be successful in that market that other companies wanting to enter the market should take on board?
I think one of the most important lessons is that Russia is very much a relationships sort of based operating environment. There are parallels people could draw with other countries that I think are worth noting here. Building a relationship, developing trust and understanding is important. Russians do like to know with whom they're dealing, and they do want to be able to feel that there is a relationship there. So time invested and perseverance and persistence in creating those foundations will pay dividends down the track. A system of trust-based relationships is very important. It's also, I think, very important that people be very clear about the transactional nature of the deal, that it's very important to be clear up front about what each side expects, because afterwards, relying on interpretations and goodwill can be sometimes fraught with risk for particularly new entrants. It's also a complicated market in the sense that it's not always immediately transparent to outsiders, especially new entrants into export, and contractual clarity and certainty about what your rights, entitlements and obligations are, of course, is vital. So those are some of the very basics, and I think that's not unique to Russia, but I do stress the relationship side of things. It is important. And look at where you have a real competitive advantage and try to understand it from the point of view of the Russian interests. Very often I think business sees what's in it for them, and it's very important to try to understand what it looks like from the other side of the desk, and why is it that you are the solution to that company's needs, and being able to articulate things in those terms. They might sound basic points, but I think very often they can be overlooked, or certain assumptions can be made about the nature of the business culture, but it's very important to be clear up front about some of those things.
Thank you. And are you able to highlight for us in which sector, perhaps, of the Russian economy do you think Australia should be learning the most from at this point in time?
Learning from Russia?
Yes.
Well, I think it's not so much who learns from whom, but where there are real complementarities. I mean, Russia is a very significant resources-based economy. We are as well, but we have managed a process of successful continuous economic reform over the last quarter century. Throughout the post-Soviet period, Australia has been one of the world leaders in recording successive years of economic growth. And we've been diversifying away from a resources-based economy to increasingly a services-based economy. A Russian businessman put it to me very interestingly not so long ago when he said, Russia needs to stop being an energy producer and become an energy consumer. And his message there was particularly in relation to small and medium-sized enterprise. Russia needs to develop its productive capabilities and not simply be a resources extractor and seller. That's an interesting challenge, and I think we have seen that challenge in our own history. And what we've done to reshape our economy into a services-based economy is actually something that I think is of interest both in practical, commercial, as well as policy terms for Russians nowadays. Their economic growth and prosperity cannot be solely dependent upon the price of oil and gas. I think they recognise that in many quarters. The challenges of making those painful reforms that are needed, that we have gone through in Australia over the last quarter century and more, are very confronting for Russia at the moment, with a fairly stagnant economy, concern about the future that simple people have in economic terms. And so I think rather than lessons to be learned, I think it's lessons that can be shared. Things that perhaps we have done that have worked for us in reshaping our economy, where Russia and indeed other economies that form part of my area of accreditation could probably profit from that experience. And I'm keen to encourage those sorts of dialogues as well, because fundamentally the generation of prosperity is part of achieving stability and security. Indeed, the Russian national security strategy makes very clear that national security is contingent upon prosperity. So that's an area where I think self-interest should be a very motivating factor. And I think it's something that we should continue to try to explore. But of course, our emphasis is on building those relationships that allow those opportunities to be exploited within the existing policy constraints. And I wouldn't mislead anybody. The relationship has difficult moments. There are points of quite serious disagreement that we have with Russia. We do not shy away from those disagreements. It's really important that that dialogue be had because ultimately we are a country that pursues a foreign policy based on certain principles and values. It is important that we maintain our commitment to those in practice as well as rhetorically. But even amongst that turbulence that occasionally strikes the relationship, we do have opportunities. We need to be clear-headed about where our interests are served by dealing with Russia in a respectful but forthright and clear way. And I think Russians respond well to that interest-based approach. I think a respectful relationship is one that weathers those sorts of points of disagreement. And it will be a focus of mine over the balance of my term to continue to prosecute our interests in Russia, the other countries of accreditation, and to help explain to both sides where our policy positions intersect, which doesn't necessarily mean they align, but where they intersect, we need to be able to deal with each other and to deal with each other as constructively as possible, even if it means continuing to disagree about points of fundamental policy principle.
Yes, I understand what you mean. And lastly, in terms of looking towards the future of the relationship between Australia and Russia, what can you see developing in terms of benefits for the people of both countries as that relationship develops?
Well, I think, again, notwithstanding the turbulence that strikes the relationship and has struck the relationship for basically the last 75 years since we established diplomatic relations with the Soviet Union during World War II, one of the abiding elements is the historical ties that exist between the peoples of Russia and Australia. And I think it's a little known fact that in the First World War, some 800 citizens of the Russian Empire, for example, fought in Australian uniform, and 35 landed on Gallipoli on the 25th of April. And the commander of the 16th Western Australian Battalion was a native of Belarus. These were people who had emigrated to Australia for various reasons and when war broke out, joined up and fought for two homelands. And that is something that I think is an abiding element that is not well understood, that in the past as well as in the future, I think those people-to-people ties are important. It is part of our agenda to continue to forge those links with the youth of Russia, with the emerging generations. So I think we can still pursue policies that will diverge and conflict at times in foreign policy terms. I think we can continue to identify areas where, against that backdrop, we nonetheless can build commercially useful and relevant relationships that will benefit Australian exporters. And I think we also need to ensure that we don't neglect working with young generations to build that understanding so that the turbulence is not the sole factor which determines the future of the relationship, because ultimately we're dealing with the lives of people who at the moment are not in a position to particularly influence some of those trends. It's important, I think, to recognise that we have an obligation to try to make the opportunities as accessible for them in the future as possible and to give them the access to the worldviews and the attitudes that have worked so successfully for Australia in building a harmonious multicultural community here that is globally integrated and is justifiably envied by countries all over the world and is genuinely admired by many, many people I speak to in Russia and elsewhere for the success story that we represent. And so that is going to be a very large part of the remainder of my term in Moscow to help make sure that that story stands on its own merits and is persuasive in its own voice for the audience in Russia and by other countries of accreditation.
Well, we believe in you and your ability to do that, and thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come to speak with us.
You're welcome.
To have you back again at AIIA to give more presentations in the future.
I'd be delighted. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.